And we know that you are the king of belly button fluff, and that's because you are an award-winning scientist on the topic.
Should I put this out there now that I stick my finger on my belly button regularly and have a sniff?
Oh.
Is that gross?
And, good. Now, tell me what you smell.
Oh, God.
It almost smells like BO. It smells like under my armpits.
Oh, now, have you tried both? Tried one and the other and tried to pick the difference?
I haven't gone that far yet, Dr. Carl, but I'm interested to do it.
Mate, you were that close to winning a prize from me because remember, the difference between science and screwing around is writing it down. You were so close. All you had to do was start doing a series of tables on what you were smelling and do it for a few days, and you could have won a Dr. Carl fun pack.
Oh, he's missed out. That's because he's used to screwing around. That's why.
Oi! Stop calling me Meatloaf.
Remember, it's never too late to have a happy childhood. You can have another go.
Oh, I love that.
In the future.
Yeah, we should definitely do that. So, Dr. Carl, we need to know whether or not you need to clean your belly button, because I think I wash mine sporadically. It's not something I focus on.
Yes and no, because the human body is complicated.
Oh.
Let me tell you a story. And this is a true story from when we had a survey on belly button fluff.
Right.
And there was a case of a young lady going out for the night in the then popular midriff exposing outfit.
Yes.
Her brother, with whom she shared the accommodation, said, "Hey, sis, you've got some belly button fluff." She then immediately went to the bathroom, picked it out with her fingernail, and then used not hers, but his electric toothbrush to clean her belly button. He then came down with the worst fungal infection of his life, thus proving that potentially it is a biohazardous material.
Oh, my
God. So let's look at the four cases. Suppose you've got a very shallow belly button. You have got very little body fat. You're down to about 10% or 5%. You're getting ready for your next pumping iron competition. Okay, there's no body fat. And you've got a very shallow belly button. And in that shallow belly button, there's just a bit of fluff with no toxins. Okay?
Right.
In that case, you don't need to clean it. But suppose you've got the same body, but it has somehow become colonized by bad bacteria and or fungi. In that case, you need to clean it.
Is that the smell I'm picking up?
No, because we haven't cultured it in a culture dish.
Oh, okay.
Now let's move on to a person who's at the other extreme who has what they call in the medical trade a fatty apron.
So you're saying like me, cute face, thick waist. Is that what you're saying, Dr. Carl?
No. Believe it or not, I didn't say any of those words.
All right.
Fatty bomba, okay.
So they've got a fatty apron, and so they've got overhanging fat, and so you've got a moist environment.
Oh.
But suppose that the belly button, while enclosed by fat and in the dark and moist, has no bacteria. In that case, you don't have to clean it. And then now take the next situation, the person with a fatty apron with nasty bacteria and fungi, they have to clean it. So there you've got your 2x2 grid. So cleaning it depends on whether you're already having problems with it.
Oh.
On the other hand, we did, when I was doing belly button research, when I was a world-leading scientist in it, we did then look at it under an optical microscope. We call for samples of people descended from all over Australia and internationally, and we looked at it under an optical microscope, and then here is something very important about science that you should pass on to your listeners. You ready for it?
Okay.
Everything, no matter how boring, always looks more interesting when you take a photograph with an electron microscope.
Okay.
Well, yeah, got all
like
detail.
What? Like belly button fluff and anything.
Anything. And so in the case of belly button fluff, we were the first to discover that it's made up of a mixture of dead skin cells and fibres of clothing that have been knocked off by a washing machine and have come loose, because in your clothing, the fibres are not held down with araldite or glue, or they're not welded, they're just held in by friction. You know, up, down, up, down, up, down this way, and then at 90 degrees, up, down, up, down, and it's just held in by friction, which is why you get more belly button fluff with a top-loading washing machine, because top-loading washing machines are rougher on your clothes than a front loader.
Yes.
You've got to get a front loader, man.
Oh.
And mentioning clothing, obviously that's why belly button fluff is mostly blue.
Why?
Yeah, because most people wear blue clothing. But hang on, Dr. J, let's just back up a bit here. Are you saying that you've got a top-loading washing machine?
Yes, I do.
Okay, look, ignore the fact that it uses more electricity and water, and let's just stick for this one factor.
Evil.
Are you ready for it?
Yes, okay.
The value of your clothing that you put into a typical wash is more than the value of the washing machine. And you are shortening their life by washing them in an evil top loader.
I buy cheap clothes and expensive washing machines, Dr. Carl. Oh, no.
I think Jade needs to go to the creek at the bottom of her property and move back to bashing them on a rock. I think that's going to happen.
No, look, I'm going to stop attacking you, Dr. Jade, and I apologise for attacking you. Sorry.
Don't be sorry. I like the facts. So if that's what the facts look like, I know they are expensive to run because it is a huge, big old machine. It would be about 25 years old. So it definitely is a dinosaur in my laundry, Dr. Carl.
They do use up a lot of energy. In our case, I time it so the washing is done when we're getting maximum power from the sun. And do you know that for a while there, under the previous government, they were actually going to charge people with solar panels for giving electricity to the grid?
Oh, God.
Mate, if that was the case, I'd expect to be able to drive into a petrol station and say, I want to fill up my car with petrol and give me $100 while you're at it.
Yeah, exactly.
How ridiculous.
Yeah.
Dr. Keller, you've got a new book. Oh, it's not even new really anymore. How long's the little book of climate change science been out now?
Since March this year, and it's up around 10,000. And the good news is that we can bring carbon dioxide levels back to what they were in the 20th century. We do not have to accept what we've got. We can actually reverse it, and the only thing stopping us are the fossil fuel companies who have lied to us all the way along, and now they're saying, oh, it's too late and we can't reverse it. We can reverse it.
Well, that sounds good for us, but even better for our kids and our future grandchildren.
See, I'm already in love with you saying that you're thinking of the children, because a lot of the thinking on climate change is short-term. And so they'll say, oh, look, I know we've got bushfires, but now's not the time to talk about climate change. I know we've got floods, but now's not the time. And let me give you the example of an 8-year-old grandniece or something, okay? I'm making this example up. You ready for me?
Yep.
Okay, so you've got this niece, this grandniece, and she's 8 years old, and everybody loves her. She loves everybody. It's just a normal niece in the family. But she's got a terrible disease, and it's going to kill her. And you have to come up with $10,000. And if you come up with $10,000, she'll be fine and she'll be part of the family and she'll enrich everybody's life with her emotions. Plus, she'll pay taxes and make Australia wealthier. But in the short term, funeral's only $2,000. You're better off letting her die.
Oh,
well, and that's the sort of short-term government,
right,
short-term thinking that we've been getting every 15 minutes. And at no stage is somebody going to say, hang on, but my niece is going to grow up, and one day, I know she's 8, but one day she's going to be 21 and she's going to be earning money and paying taxes.
It's that immediate gratification.
When are we going to be voting one, Dr. Carl? When is Dr. Carl going to stand for Prime Minister?
Well, did you do a run as a politician or as a member?
I went for the Federal Senate, and out of the 782,000 votes I needed to get into the Federal Senate for New South Wales, I got 44,000 votes, which apparently was a record for the number of votes under the line. And if you don't know what under the line means, then you probably deserve whatever happens to you in politics. Well, the thing is that all that is needed for evil to triumph is that good people do nothing.
Exactly. By. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. You're going to keep trying, mate? You're going to keep having a crack?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, good.
Good for you. Have a crack on. Dr. Carl, what number book is this? Just quickly before we let you go.
47, and I'm kind of writing my autobiography, but I'm a bit embarrassed by it.
Don't be embarrassed by it. The world needs to read it. And I, for one, will ask you for a signed copy when it happens.
Oh.
Dr. Carl.
You're my bestie.
The book is The Little Book of Climate Change Science. Grab it. Put it in your Christmas stocking. It is available everywhere. Thank you very much, Dr. Carl.
Thank you so much.